Greetings, everyone, and welcome to The Law Hour, an editorial review. The Law Hour is sponsored by the Gordon Law School of Isabella, Missouri. Now, The Law Hour is an educational service in the public interest, and I'm your narrator, George Gordon. The Law Hour, an editorial review, is heard nationally on 29 AM and FM radio stations 7 days a week here in the United States and in more than 75 countries worldwide over the Internet. For more information about The Law Hour and editorial review, please visit my webpage at georgegordon.org. Again, that's georgegordon.org. Now, The Law Hour and editorial review brings you important information about law news and current events, so stay tuned for tonight's special report on the legal system right after this. You know, we Americans may hold the dubious honor of being the most litigious people in the world, but when it comes to law, we seem to be among the most ignorant. Today, most Americans feel powerless to resist the evils that they see perpetrated against our liberties, privacy, and property, and they're being put upon us by these powerful government agencies, multinational corporations, lobbies, and the news media. But you know, we don't have to remain helpless. The institution which was designed by God and incorporated into our Constitution and Bill of Rights is called the judicial power. Now, the courts are the proper repository for the protection of our rights, liberties, and property, not the Congress and not the political process. Now, did you know that the privilege against self-incrimination is neither accorded to the passive resistant nor to the person who is ignorant of his rights? It's not afforded to one who is indifferent thereto, and that's because it is a fighting clause, and its benefits can be retained only by sustained combat. It cannot be claimed by an attorney or a solicitor. It's valid only when insisted upon by a belligerent claimant in person. So says U.S. versus Johnson. And that's why I contend that we ought to listen more to the judges and less to the politicians and the lawyers. Now, did you hear what that judge said in that statement? He said, your rights cannot be claimed by your attorney or solicitor. Your rights can only be claimed by you, the belligerent claimant in person. Now, if you'd like more information about courtroom strategy and procedure, just call the law school at 417-273-4967 and be sure to ask for my free general law CD package while you're at it. Now, that's a 4-hour commentary on the Gordon Law School. Remember, it's entertaining, educational, it's informative. Best of all, it's free of charge. Now, courtroom strategy and procedure is available on compact disc for adult home education. If you're online, just go to the website georgegordon.org. Click onto the email. Send an email request for that free general law CD package. That's georgegordon.org or call direct 417-273-4967. Well, I got another letter from Ken. Ken, remember, is the vegetarian that we talked about a couple of nights ago concerning this thing of meat and meats. Well, he wrote a second letter, and it says, the legal system is now our enemy. The legal system is our entity, by Dennis Prager. Evidently, Ken thought that that was a pretty good essay. Sent it to me, and I read the essay, and I couldn't agree more. I think that it's probably right on point. Listen to this. See if you agree. Prager says, I was raised to believe that law is the glory of decent society, and that the rule of law is the sine qua non of civilization, that international law is the greatest protector of human rights, that lawyers should be coupled with doctors as an elite profession to which a young person can aspire, that making laws is the great work of legislatures, and that law schools are among the noble places of learning in society, and that the title judge was perhaps the highest appellation in society, and that the jury system is an essential component of a just society. Most of the preceding has become nonsense. And I've come to fear almost everything having to do with the law. And though there are many fine people in the legal profession, the thought, and though law is necessary to protect society from descending into chaos, I now fear the legal system more than I do Islamic terrorists. I'm far from being alone. I believe that more Americans rightly fear being ruined by the American legal system than by being killed by a terrorist. Now, tens of millions of innocent Americans and untold numbers of innocent institutions, from schools to businesses, stand a good chance of having their money legally stolen through litigation, or even the mere threat of litigation. Innumerable American children are terribly harmed by family lawyers who egg on their clients to destroy the other parent. Parents fear allowing visiting children to play on their property, in their pools, or on their trampolines, for example, lest they be sued in case of an injury. Airlines won't give passengers aspirin for fear of a lawsuit. Physicians prescribe unnecessary procedures and medicines, raising the national medical bill astronomically for fear of being sued. American hotel guests can no longer breathe fresh air because hotels are no longer built with windows that open, lest they be sued if a hotel guest falls out or jumps out of one of those windows. Men and women fear speaking normally at work, lest they be sued. And the deprivation of freedoms in America because of laws and litigations has made this country less free than at any time in our history. Laws in America and internationally is no longer on the side of the decent. It is a weapon in the hands of the indecent. Everything related to law has been corrupted. Law schools. Most people leave law school morally worse than when they entered. When they enter law school, most students think in terms of right or wrong. In law school, they are taught to reject such thinking and to think only in terms of legal and illegal. This transformation of morals into legal categories, reinforced most especially in trial law and particularly among criminal defense lawyers, explains the proliferation of amoral lawyers and the destructive role that many trial lawyers play in our society today. Lawyers. The best humor is almost always the truest humor, and the funniest jokes that I've ever heard were those told by Soviet dissidents, and the funniest today are about lawyers. Both types of jokes are so humorous because they come from the same place, bitterness at one's helplessness against an overwhelming and oppressive power, the communist system in the Soviet Union and the legal system in the United States of America. International law. Had America followed the proponents of international law, the people of Iraq would still be tortured and murdered by Saddam Hussein's regime. The frenzied screams of the international law community against American liberation of Iraq were the screams of people who hate American power and American values far more than they hate tyrannies. International law and international treaties, all broken by the very regimes that we need to be protected against, are now the weapon of choice against American moral and military power. Law. Law is man-made series of rules. That is all it is. In and of itself, law is entirely amoral. There are moral laws and immoral laws. Both decent and vicious governments make laws. The Holocaust began legally. Nazis and communists have judges and lawyers who respect their society's laws. In our country, slavery was entirely legal, as was the racial segregation that followed it. The notion that obedience to a society's laws is always moral is itself immoral. and judges. Too many judges are unfit for their position. How else can one explain the New York State Supreme Court ruling that women can bare their breasts in public because men can? How do we explain the judges who liberate criminals only to have those criminals murder and rape again? Or the many judges who regard their primary role as imposing their values on society? This has led to an undermining of the democratic process beyond the wildest hopes of any homegrown fascist or communist. Juries. Juries are now merely weapons in the hands of amoral attorneys. The attorney's purpose is to win, not to find justice, let alone truth. And the jury is selected only for that purpose. The Florida lawyer who brought the new legal terror weapon of class action suit against tobacco and tobacco companies rejected over 800 potential jurors before he could find six people who do not believe that anyone who smokes has freely chosen to do so. And now a trial lawyer is seeking the Democratic Party's nomination for president. He ought to win it. Trial lawyers are, after all, the largest contributors to him and to his party. And if that doesn't frighten enough Americans, we will cease being a free country. If America is destroyed, it will be done legally. JWR contributor Dennis Prager hosts a national daily radio show based in Los Angeles. He is the author, most recently, of Happiness is a Serious Problem. Well, unfortunately, Ken, I have to agree with Mr. Prager and his analysis of the American legal system the way it is today. By and large, I'd like to comment on that, because not everything that he says is necessarily correct, but much of what he says is true, and much of what he says, though they be wicked and evil, have been used. They ought not to be, and in some cases they're illegal and unlawful. But before we start with an analysis, let me tell you what happened many, many years ago. We used to have a legal system that was moral and that was just. It was administered by the creator of the universe himself. If that's not moral and just, I don't know how much more moral or righteous you can get than having God administer the legal system, although most people hate God and they hate his legal system. I think that most people hate God and hate his legal system because they're really, deep down inside, people who are themselves unjust. After all, why would a just man despise justice? But an unjust man would despise justice, and I suspect that most Americans are unjust. And because they're unjust, they despise justice and they love the legal system just the way it is. If they didn't, why in the world would we have a legal system the way ours is? Well, Ken, about 3,000 years ago, around 1100 B.C., between 1100 and 1000 B.C., we had a judge by the name of Samuel, and this story is found in 1 Samuel chapter 8. It's a landmark decision. It's a landmark piece of international geopolitics. It's almost on the scope of never before and never again. Samuel, the last judge in Israel, wasn't the last judge because God intended that there be no more judges. He was the last judge because the people came to God's judge, the judge. Today we would call him the President of the United States, the Chief Executive Officer. You see, in ancient Israel, they didn't have a legislature, they didn't have a Congress, they didn't have a lawmaking body. Why would they need one? They already had all of the laws, all of the rules, all of the regulations, all of the customs, usages, and practices that were given to them by their Creator, the God of creation. Whether you call him Allah or Yahweh or Jehovah or God or Jesus or Buddha, whatever label, first cause, this is the guy that said, "Let there be light," and there was light. This is the guy who said, thou shalt not steal, thou shalt do no murder. He made all of the laws. And he was the prince, he was the king, he was the administrator over limited government and private property rights. Thou shalt not steal is the basis of private property rights. Without it, you cannot own personal private property. And since the people didn't want him to talk to them directly, it wasn't that he was mute. It wasn't that he was bashful. He got up on top of Mount Sinai, and with thunder and lightning and earthquakes, he spoke to the people. Live and direct. And the people were so terrified by this God that they said to Moses, let not God speak with us, lest we die. You speak to God and then come and tell us. And everything that you tell us, we will do and be obedient. So Moses went up to God and said, hey, listen, you're scaring the hell out of these people. They don't want you talking to them anymore. They want me to be their representative. God said, well, okay. It's all right, why me? And that was the beginning of representative government. Not democracy. Representative government in Israel. So Moses was God's representative, and Moses was the people's representative. The principal parties in the pact, the principal parties in the contract were God and the people. Moses was the emissary. He was the ambassador. He was the go-between. He was the spokesman, the secretary. And when he died, Joshua took that position. And through a succession of judges, until they finally culminated in the last judge, whose name was Samuel. This began in 1327 B.C. and terminated around, somewhere around 1050 B.C. in round numbers. So here's Samuel. Now listen to the story. It's in 1 Samuel chapter 8. If you got a Bible, why don't you follow along? It came to pass when Samuel was old that he made his sons judges over Israel. And the name of the firstborn was Joel, and the name of his second Abiah, and they were judges in Beersheba. Samuel's sons did not walk in Samuel's ways, but they turned aside after lucre, and they took bribes, and they perverted judgment. They were a couple of judges that could be bought. They weren't honest. They were decidedly dishonest. They took bribes. They did not judge righteous judgment. And they were, after all, representing the Creator of the universe. They were representing God Almighty Himself. So I guess the question arises, well, why did God allow that? Well, let's read on. He says here in verse 4, then all the elders of Israel gathered themselves together, and they came to Samuel at Ramah. And they said to him, behold, you're old, and your sons walk not in your ways. Now make us a king to judge us like all the nations. So the people, it was kind of a revolution. It was kind of a rebellion. The people came to Samuel. And they said, look, your sons, you know, they're taking bribes. They're like Dick Nixon over here. You know, they're criminals. And we don't like that. And we want to change our government from this theocracy. We want to have a monarchy. We want to do like the Egyptians do. And the Babylonians and the Assyrians. We want a king like all the nations around us. Today, we would say we want a democracy like the Canadians and the Mexicans and all the nations around us. We don't like your government. We don't like your administration. So in verse 5, verse 6, he said, the thing displeased Samuel. It ticked him off when they said, give us a king to judge us. So Samuel prayed unto the Eternal. Samuel wasn't happy that the people didn't like him and didn't like his sons. So he went to God and he said, hey God, what do you think of this? So in verse 7, The Eternal said to Samuel, "Hearken unto the voice of the people and all that they say unto you, because they've not rejected you, Sam. They've rejected me, that I should not reign over them." You see, the people were using those two boys and Samuel as the excuse. They didn't want God reigning over them. Well, that's the way God saw it. And in verse 8, he went on to say, "Well, according to all the works which they have done since the day that I brought them up out of Egypt, even to this day, wherewith they have forsaken me and served other gods, so do they also unto you. Now therefore hearken unto their voice, howbeit yet protest solemnly unto them, and show them the manner of the king that shall reign over them." Notice in verse 8 it says, "They have forsaken me and served other gods." You know, when we don't practice the law of God, we forsake God and we practice the law of the United States of America. We practice the laws of Missouri. We get corporate charters. We open bank accounts and checking accounts. We get marriage licenses, birth certificates, and driver's licenses. We practice the laws of the states and the governments around us. These are foreign and alien gods. These are sovereigns. That's why they call it the sovereign state of Texas. The sovereign state of Texas, New York, the sovereign nation of France, Germany, Russia. You see, the people, we don't like God. We don't like laws that say thou shalt not commit adultery. He interferes with our sex lives. And besides that, God is harsh. He's not kinder and gentler. He wants to take whores out and stone them to death. We want to take them and bed them down at the Holiday Inn. There's a natural, innate conflict. And the Apostle Paul identified it in Romans 8, verse 7. He said that the carnal mind is enmity against God. It isn't subject to the law of God, and neither indeed can be. I haven't met very many people that had a good word about God. All they talk about Jesus and Him crucified, and do you know the Lord, brother, and do you love Jesus? But when it comes right down to the definition of the word love in the Bible, which says, "For this is the love of God, that we keep His commandments," God can stick it in His left ear for all we care. We're not about to keep His commandments. And we're sure as hell not about to keep His laws. The statutes, judgments, and commandments that go along with the Ten Commandments, that isn't going to happen. And these people were right up front. They came right up to God and they said, "We don't want you ruling over us. We want a king." In modern America, we're a bunch of hypocrites. We go to church. 65% of us go to church. And then we go out to the election and we vote for Kerry and Bush. I never heard of anybody voting for Jesus. And I suppose people think that God is some kind of a Democrat or a Republican, and that when He returns to earth, He's going to go out and stump for your vote and kind of plead and wheedle and whine and hope that you vote for Him instead of John Kerry. I just don't think that's going to happen. I don't think Jesus is going to come back here and set up a democracy. I think He's going to set up a dictatorship. I think God is a dictator, just like my daddy was. And I think He's just going to tell us to sit down, shut up, and fold our hands, and like it or lump it. And if you don't lump it, I think you'll break your legs. I don't think He's kind, and I don't think He's gentle. Well, of course, maybe that's just my opinion. But let me read on. I'll tell you a little bit more about this guy. I hear everybody talking about Jesus loves you. But from what I read here in the scripture, He looks like He's meaner than a junkyard dog to me. Now listen to this. In verse 9, He said, "Now therefore hearken unto their voice, howbeit yet protest solemnly unto them, and show them the manner of the king that shall reign over them." So He said, you go ahead and give them a king. Now that's pretty white of Him if you stop and think about it. He's telling them now that this is a bad mistake. He said, protest solemnly. You know, keep a straight face when you do it, Sam. And go out there and tell them that this isn't a very good idea. But we're really in hopes that they don't listen to you. And that they go ahead and they inaugurate this king in place of me. And they did. In verse 10, Samuel told all the words that the Eternal had told to him, and he said to the people that asked him of a king, and he said, "This will be the manner of the king that shall reign over you. This king is going to take your sons and appoint them for himself for his chariots and to be his horsemen, and some shall run before his chariots." Well, President Eisenhower called this the military-industrial complex. It's called the draft. Military conscription. It's called the war in Iraq. And a lot of you people are sitting over here chafing under this war in Iraq, and you're saying to yourselves, "Why, this is a bad war, and I'm opposed to this war, and my kids are getting killed in this war, and I don't like it." Now, all of you people that are complaining about the war in Iraq need to remember that it was you, and it was your great-great-granddaddy, 84 generations back, or about, in this case, probably 80 generations or 75 generations back, that said, "We want a king, like all the nations around us. We don't want God ruling over us. We want George Bush. We got him. Now what's your complaint?" "We want Bill Clinton." "You got him. So what's your complaint?" "We want Dick Nixon." "You got him. Why are you complaining?" Well, you know, God said that you people would complain. You complained about God when he ruled over you. You complained about King George when he ruled over you. And now you're complaining about George Bush when he rules over you. You people have never been happy, and you have never been satisfied from the Garden of Eden to this day concerning your government. You don't like anarchy. You don't like monarchy. You don't like Republican government. You don't like Democratic government. And you don't like despotic dictatorships. You don't like God Almighty Himself. You're not happy with your government. You've never been happy with your government. And I don't know of anybody anywhere in the world today that is happy with their government. In fact, all I hear is complaints. I hear complaints on the Dan Rather news show, the Lair News Hour. I hear it in Time and Newsweek and USA Today. I've never read a story that said about the people who loved the government and loved the laws and were just thrilled and delighted. All I hear is negative. But he goes on. He's got more to say. And he said in verse 12, he will appoint him captains over thousands and captains over fifties, and he's going to set them to ear his ground and to reap his harvest and to make his instruments of war and his instruments and his chariots. He's going to take your daughters to be confectionaries and to be cooks and to be bakers. He's going to take your fields and your vineyards and your olive yards, even the best of them, and give to his servants. And he's going to take the tenth of your seed and of your vineyards, and he's going to give it to his officers and to his servants. He's going to take your men servants and your maid servants and your goodliest young men and your asses and put them to his work. He's going to take the tenth of your sheep, and you're going to be his servants. Now that's up through verse 17. Now listen, this military-industrial complex has to be supported by taxes, and so we have income tax and property tax, and we have social security taxes. We've got half of our women working in the workforce. We've got a military-industrial complex that takes your sons and sends them off to Iraq. We're not happy with anything that's going on. We're complaining bitterly about everything that George Bush is doing. Aren't we? And then in verse 18, he goes on to say, "And you shall cry out in that day because of your king, which you shall have chosen you. And the Eternal will not hear you in that day." Notice he's talking about a democracy. It's not King George. It's not King David or King Solomon. It's the king that you choose to put over you. That's democratic government. That's the voice of the people. You people chose George Bush. You chose Bill Clinton. You chose Franklin D. Roosevelt. You rejected the God of Israel. You said, we're not going to have this guy to reign over us. And then people tell me that they're just praying to God concerning this or that problem. They're just praying to Jesus. Now pay attention here in verse 18. He said, you'll cry out to me in that day and I won't hear you. Do you think that by praying, do you think that by your much speaking, that the God of Israel is going to come down here and save you from the Vietnam or the Iraqi or Afghan war? Do you think for a minute that this God is going to listen to your prayers after he said, I'm not going to hear it? He just told you, he said, I ain't listening to this crap. Now, Ken, there is a solution to the problem. At least I think there's a pretty good solution to the problem, but it's not going to be by praying to Jesus. I'll tell you that. Jesus already told you I ain't listening to you. Now, you gave me the finger, told me to get the hell out of your lives, and I did. God has gotten out of our lives. And now, how do you like it? You didn't like him when he was in your life. Why would you like him any more if he came back into your life? Man, that's crazy on its face. So he said, listen, and like my old granny used to say, you made your bed, sweetheart, now go sleep in it. Well, boys and girls, we made our political bed. And now our God has said, now go sleep in it. See how you like it. Now in verse 19, the people said, nevertheless, the people refused to obey the voice of Samuel, and they said, no, but we will have a king over us, that we may also be like all the nations. We want to be like the Russians and the Chinese and the Cubans. We want to have a king. Hey, we want to practice socialist Ponzi schemes like all the rest of these socialist communists around us. That's why we've adopted the 10 planks to the Communist Manifesto, like the fifth plank that calls for a central bank in place of just weights and balances that God told us to use in Leviticus 19:35 and 36. The fifth plank is an exact opposite, 180-degree contrary principle of economics. We want a central bank. We want the Federal Reserve. And then, you know, that heavy progressive income tax in the second plank to the Communist Manifesto? That's what we Americans want. We don't want tithing. We don't want to pay 10% to God. We want to pay 30, 40, or 50% or 70% to our own king, our God, George Bush. Oh, you don't think so? Well, how many of you voted for Jesus in the last election? Huh? Verse 21, Samuel heard all these words of the people, and he rehearsed them in the ears of the Eternal. And the Eternal said to Samuel, hearken unto their voice, make him a king. And Samuel said to every man, unto the men of Israel, go ye every man into his city. He says, all right, that's what you want. Let's give it to you. Now, the other day, I was reading a book, and this guy said that, you know, you can't make a living on $5 an hour. We got to raise the minimum wage to $8. That's the thinking of fiat currency. That's the results of giving up just weights and balances. It's the results of turning against God and the creation, the Creator's legal system, which is what we're discussing here, the legal system. It's turned against us. This legal system in America doesn't work for us. It works against us. Well, the legal system of America is not the legal system of Moses. It's not the legal system of God. That was the common law. That was the system of law that we Americans practiced between 1787 and 1933. Then we elected Franklin D. Roosevelt, and we adopted the 10 planks to the Communist Manifesto. We outlawed gold and silver coin. We adopted a Federal Reserve Bank. We've adopted fiat paper currency. We've adopted a legal system that is totally foreign and alien to the laws of God. And we love it. You know why I know that? Because in 1992 and 1996, a guy by the name of Steve Forbes, remember that guy? Steve Forbes. He ran on the Republican ticket. He said, I want the nomination for the Republican ticket to be president of the United States because I want to reform the income tax system. I want to abolish the second plank to the Communist Manifesto. I want to replace it with a flat tax. And the people of America rejected Forbes just like they rejected God Almighty himself. They said, not by the hair on my chinny chin chin are we going to give up the second plank to the Communist Manifesto and go back to a flat tax like tithing. Not in America. Not in our democracy. So they voted for Clinton, and then they voted for Clinton a second time, and in both cases they rejected Forbes. Now, I'm not railing on you for your political ideology. I mean, you know, you're entitled to your political views. But, you know, here's a guy by the name of Dennis Prager. And Ken writes me a letter and says, hey, listen, we're just really bummed out about our legal system. You ought to be. You rejected the legal system that you got from Moses and replaced it with a communist, socialist counterfeit, and now you're complaining, and now are you going to pray to Jesus and say, oh my God, save us from this? Remember, he already said, don't call on me, I'll call on you. Don't call me, I'll call you. So, when the young man said, I was raised to believe the law is the glory of decent society and that the rule of law is the sine qua non of civilization, that international law is the greatest protector of human rights, and that lawyers should be coupled with doctors as an elite profession to which a young person can aspire, and that making laws is the great work of legislatures, that law schools are among the noble places of learning in society, the title judge was perhaps the highest appellation in society, and the jury system is an essential component of a just society. That came from Deuteronomy chapter 1, where our God said that he wanted us to appoint judges that were honest and practiced his law. In Exodus chapter 18, Moses and Jethro went to work and they set up an appellate judicial system approved by God Almighty himself, and we threw it away. Hey, Ken, it hasn't always been this way, not in America. Hey, we used to have judges that were honest and honorable, judged righteous judgment. Well, that's because we practiced a different law. We practiced the law of property. We didn't practice the 10 planks to the Communist Manifesto. We practiced the 10 principles of our Bill of Rights. We took 22 principles out of the Bible, out of Exodus 19, verse 16, through Exodus 24, 8. 22 principles from the Ten Commandments. And we incorporated those into the Constitution of the United States. Now, it hasn't always been like this. You know, one day we woke up, Ken, and we said, hey, we got to have a king like all the nations around us. My God, we got to have a democracy. Not one signer of our Declaration of Independence ever had one good word about a democracy. They said it was as bad as or worse than a monarchy or a despotism. And these damn pulpit parrots in our political system, they keep hammering away on us. Our democratic this and democratic that, and the president wants to democratize Iraq. Hell, you people in Iraq were better off with Saddam Hussein as bad as he was compared to what you're going to get with this democracy that's being foisted off upon you. The democracy that's being foisted off upon the Iraqis over there is the same kind of democracy that's been foisted off upon us Americans. It's communism and socialism, and you call it democratic. Doesn't make any difference what you hang the label on. It's the results that you get from it. He says, I've come to fear almost having to do, or almost everything having to do with the law. You bet. Americans are terrified of the law. Social lady can come and take your children right out of your home. And they do. They take 2.5 million of them every year. In America today, we're terrorized by 25,000 laws that regulate our Second Amendment right to keep and bear arms. Hell, the Iraqis over there have guns, fully automatic guns. They walk out in the streets and fire them in the air. The Iraqis under military occupation have more gun rights than Americans do, for crying out loud. Take your gun out on the street and fire three rounds in the air and see what happens to you. Oh no, Ken, it hasn't always been this way in America. What we have in America is a tyranny. It's a democratic tyranny. Take a look at your schools with zero tolerance. He said, I've come to fear almost everything having to do with law, though there are many fine people in the legal profession, and though law is necessary to protect society from descending into chaos, I now fear the legal profession more than I do Islamic terror. I'm far from alone, and I believe that more Americans rightly fear being ruined by the American legal system than are being killed by terrorists. You're exactly right, boys and girls. You don't have any fear from Osama bin Laden. You can sit back and forget that. Those terrorists over the last 25 years haven't killed 5,000 people. But let me tell you, tens of thousands of Americans come under the brunt of the American legal oppression every day. I get letters and emails and telephone calls every day that tell me about the oppression going on. Hell, it goes on. You people go out and you get on an airliner, for crying out loud, and you're terrorized in your airports. Which leads me to the conclusion that you must love tyranny and terrorism, or you wouldn't fly on airplanes. Or you just don't give a damn. One or the other. I just did a program last night, and I said, look what's going on in your public schools. You've institutionalized your children, and you send your children to the public schools so they can be sniffed by drug dogs, so they can go through magnetometers to see if they've got metal on them. They're treated in the public school system like prisoners in a penitentiary. And you keep sending them back. It isn't as if there isn't a solution. The solution's simple. Stop flying on airplanes. Jerk your kid out of the public school. Picture this. Nobody flies on a damn airplane again. Do you think they'll change? Nobody goes to public school tomorrow morning. Do you think maybe they would change? Damn rights they'd change. But, you know, as long as you submit to this tyranny and say, well, gosh, everybody else is sending their kid to school. Well, gosh, I got to get from here to there, so I guess I have to submit. Ladies and gentlemen, the chains that you wear upon your shoulders, you deserve. Sit down, shut up, fold your hands, and enjoy the ride. You brought it on yourselves. You said to God, kiss off. And he did. And this is what you've replaced it with. In law, Ken, we call this the proximate cause of your own injury. Proximate cause of your own injury. Then this boy goes on and he says, tens of millions of innocent Americans and untold numbers of innocent institutions from schools to businesses stand a good chance of having their money legally stolen through litigation or even the mere threat of it. You bet. Yeah. These are unjust times. I mean, you can just threaten somebody with litigation. Threaten a school board with litigation and they'll throw the Bible out of public school. America has degenerated into a nation of spineless jellyfish who can no longer stand up for right, truth, and righteousness. And if there is any, send me a letter and tell me about it, would you? I'll put it on the air. I haven't seen it. The wicked flee when none pursue. It's the righteous who are as bold as lions. I don't see very many righteous Americans out there standing up bold as lions. Do you? Innumerable American children are terribly harmed by family lawyers who egg on their clients to destroy the other parent. This is the divorce system. We denied. We refused. We have given up. Quit. The law of God. We will not practice the marriage laws or the divorce laws of God. We have our own laws. We have replaced the marriage and divorce laws of the scripture with our own marriage and divorce laws. Under the law of God, Americans divorced 8 times per 100,000 marriages in 1900, and today it's 67 marriages out of 100, 67%. From 8-tenths of a percent, let's see, 8-tenths, 8 out of 100,000, 10 out of 100,000 be 1 in 1,000. Less than 1 in 1,000 divorces in 1900 to 67% today. That's what we've traded it for. I don't think it was a good trade, Ken, but then, you know, who am I to get in the way of 270 million Americans that said, we don't want the legal system of God and Moses. We want the legal system of New York, California, Washington, Oregon, and Texas. Okay, well, now you got it. What are you complaining about? And now this guy writes a letter, Prager, and he says, oh my God, these lawyers are over here. They're seeking to destroy the family. Yeah, yeah, that's right. That's what God told you. In fact, God said he was going to protest solemnly to you. He said, rethink this. This is a bad idea. Do you remember? And what did we tell him? We said, nevertheless, we're going to have a king like all the nations around us. Well, okay, now you got it, sweetheart. Now go sleep in it. Now, parents fear allowing visiting children to play on their property, in their pools, or on their trampolines, for example, lest they be sued in case of injury. We've gone to limited liability. You see, God requires that we practice strict liability. Oh no, we said, we're not going to practice strict liability. We're going to practice limited liability. We're going to practice insurance. And we did. And we do. And the results of insurance, limited liability, is that you're not responsible, the insurance company is. And yes, we're going to sue you. Because I'm not responsible for falling off of your trampoline. You're responsible for me falling off of your trampoline. Strict liability we threw out. Well, okay. Now that you have replaced strict liability with insurance, there is a consequence to that, Ken. Airlines won't give passengers an aspirin for fear of lawsuits. Well, if the airline stewardess gave you an aspirin and the aspirin caused you some kind of a damage, you'd sue the airline. So we just sit there and say, well, we're not going to give you anything. Now, if you were responsible and you said, give me some, hey, stewardess, give me some strychnine. And the stewardess comes over and says, okay, here's some strychnine. You're responsible for what you do to it, and you take it and kill yourself. Today, you could sue the airline under the law of Moses, and you're responsible for what you do with strychnine. That's limited liability. Physicians prescribe unnecessary procedures, raising the national medical bill astronomically for fear of being sued. You're not responsible. The doctor's responsible. That's why he has to have malpractice insurance. So with malpractice insurance, up goes his fees. American hotel guests can no longer breathe fresh air because hotels are no longer built with windows that open lest they be sued if a hotel guest falls out of one. Here's that limited liability. Now, men and women fear speaking normally at work lest they be sued. Free speech has been lost to limited liability. The deprivation of freedoms in America because of laws and litigation has made this country less free than at any time in our history. That's exactly right. We gave up the common law. We've replaced it with the Roman civil law. We've replaced the 10 planks or the 10 principles of our Bill of Rights with the 10 planks to the Communist Manifesto. And yes, Ken, there's a change. A measurable change in the outcome. The difference between the civil law and the common law are very measurable. Let me give you a caveat and then we'll continue. You're listening to The Law Hour, an editorial review sponsored by the Gordon Law School of Isabella, Missouri. Now, The Law Hour, an editorial review, brings you timely reports on law, science, education, politics, religion, news, and current events from the scriptural perspective. And we do that 7 days a week. The sources of information that we use on this program are true, accurate, and correct to the best of our knowledge and belief. The Law Hour and Editorial Review gives credit to the authors and publications used on this program, and we often endorse and recommend books, periodicals, papers, and newsletters to our listeners. The endorsements or recommendations that we do give do not mean that the authors or publications so endorsed or recommended will reciprocate. And that's because most of the authors and publications cited on the Law Hour are political, religious, economic, sectarian, racial, and ethnic partisans whose viewpoint is not endorsed by the Law Hour, an editorial review, and vice versa. They don't necessarily endorse the views of the Law Hour and editorial review. And the opinions, beliefs, comments, views, and expressions that you hear on this program are mine and mine alone, and they do not necessarily represent the beliefs and opinions of the advertiser, sponsors, management, or staff of the network or of this radio station. For more information about the Law Hour and editorial review, please go to the website georgegordon.org, or you can call direct 417-273-4967. All right, we're reviewing an essay called The Legal System is Now Our Enemy, and it was written by Dennis Prager. Dennis Prager is a talk show host, JWR contributor. Dennis Prager hosts a national daily radio show based in Los Angeles, and he's the author of most recently Happiness is a Serious Problem. Everything related to law has been corrupted. That's exactly correct. I couldn't agree with you more. When we threw away our common law and replaced it with the Communists' Manifesto, it has corrupted everything in our law. Okay, but isn't that what we intended to do? Law in America and internationally is no longer on the side of the decent. It is a weapon in the hands of the indecent. Yep, that's exactly correct. I agree. That's what it's degenerated into. Communism and limited liability are not good practices in law. And now it's good for us that we've experimented with communism and limited liability, because when you're told something, it doesn't mean anything. But when you experience it, when you get into it right up to your elbows, when you can squish it through your fingers, then you can appreciate it. And that's where we're at today. We are now wallowing in this morass of socialism and communism. You now have social lady who is the dumbest woman in our society, with the greatest legal and judicial power in our society. Social lady has more power in our society. She can come into your home and take your children away. She doesn't need a court order. She doesn't need probable cause. She doesn't need a search warrant. She can just come take them. And remember, these social ladies and school teachers are professionals. They're guardians, professional guardians. They have a status. And academically, they're the dumbest people in our society. Social lady and school teacher lady, school marm, can't, they're not smart enough to make lawyer. They're not smart enough to make doctor. They can't make business. They can't make engineers. So they could only become social ladies and school marms, and they have, and they did. And school marm over here is practicing zero tolerance in the school. I gave you that story last night. And social lady, I gave you last week. Yeah, these people have a tremendous amount of power. But hey, we wouldn't have it any other way, would we? We're the people that told God to stick it in his left ear, didn't we? Stick it where there's no daylight and get the hell out of our lives. We want George Bush to rule over us. We want Bill Clinton. We want Franklin Roosevelt. We want Social Security, minimum wage, and the Federal Reserve. We want an income tax like all the nations around us. I can't for the life of me understand, boys and girls, how America became the wealthiest, most powerful nation in the world, politically, socially, economically, militarily, in 113 years. And we turn around and say, we don't like this. We want common equality. Why, we want to be like all the socialists and the communists. We want to stand in line. We want poverty. We want want. We want inflation. We want high taxes. We want a lower standard of living. We can't stand this success. We've had too much. So we did. And this is the results. And don't forget that God told you, you're going to cry out to me in that day, and when you do, I'm not going to listen to this. I ain't hearing it. And he goes on to say about law here, he says, law is man-made series of rules. That's all it is. In and of itself, law is entirely amoral. Who makes our law? Isn't it Ted Kennedy and Dianne Feinstein and Arlen Specter and George Bush? Aren't those the people that make our laws for us? These man-made rules? Aren't these the people that we vote for? Now, we told God that we weren't going to have any part of thou shalt not steal. We're not going to have any part of your Ten Commandments. We're going to throw your damn Bible and all of your damn laws out of our public schools, and we have. Now you come back and you complain and you say, why, these man-made laws are amoral at best. Yeah, you're right, Ken. You're right, Mr. Prager. I agree. I think you're hit the nail right on the head. But you know, boys and girls, we're the proximate cause of our own injury. We're the one that threw God out. We said, we won't have you to rule over us. We're going to have Bill Clinton and George Bush and Dianne Feinstein and Barbara Boxer. Okay, well now you got Dianne and Barbara. And our God told us, now go sit down, shut up, fold your hands, like it or lump it. And don't call on me. How do you like that? Can't ever say that God didn't give you what you wanted. We got what we wanted. We got what we demanded. Judges, he says, too many judges are unfit for their position. Deuteronomy 1, God instructed us, he said, when you appoint these judges, they have to practice my law. When a judge goes up before a Senate committee, does the committee ask him, do you obey God and keep his commandments, judge? Do you enforce the law that says thou shalt not steal and thou shalt not commit adultery and thou shalt have no other gods before me? Not by the hair on his chinny chin chin. Arlen Specter now is the chairman of the Judiciary Committee. You think Arlen Specter is going to select judges pursuant to God's standards that he set down for us in Deuteronomy chapter 1? Huh? You believe that? You believe that? I got a bridge for you. I got a watch. No, sir. The judges that are going to be selected by Arlen Specter and the Senate committee are going to be socialists and communists just like they are. And we're going to have that kind of socialist and communist sitting on the bench to rule over us and to judge us. Now, I tell you, boys and girls, we're the proximate cause of our own injury. So don't blame God. Blame yourself. Hey, I'm out of time. Just when you're getting wound up and having fun, the clock runs out. You've been listening to The Law Hour, an editorial review sponsored by the Gordon Law School of Isabella, Missouri. The Law Hour is heard 7 days a week in the United States, worldwide, over the Internet. For more information about the Law School and The Law Hour, please go to the website georgegordon.org. The Law Hour brings you timely reports on law, science, education, politics, religion, news, and current events, and we do it 7 days a week. The Law Hour is carried worldwide on the Internet, and all of these Law Hour programs are archived on the Internet by title and date. The Law Hour is an educational service brought to you in the public interest. Well, there's the signal says time's up. We got to leave it right there. We'll see you back here tomorrow night. Same time, same station. So until then, good night, friends.